You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
The Oakland Athletics, along with every other team, are getting ready to go home after a very long spring training, which is exciting for everybody. Let's talk to Jane Lee about that. I'm sure she's also very excited to go home. I'm Allison Futter. Jane, so here we are at the end of spring training, and the A's appear to have a starting rotation that they've announced. So a couple of guys snuck in there. What can you tell us about the final five?
Yeah, I think the first three, no surprise, Kendall Graveman, Sean Manaea, Jarrell Cotton, with Sonny Gray out, of course, because it's a lat injury. And then the final two ended up being Andrew Triggs and Raul Espejon out of the mix. And I don't think it was too much of a surprise, just based on the way things have been going for him recently. He really struggled his last two starts, and you know, it's that time of spring where the A's need to see results, and they weren't there for him. And I know you can only glean so much from spring training results, but when there's, you know, jobs to be won, I mean, it really does matter how these guys perform, especially in recent weeks where the lineup, you know, they're not just out there for two or three innings, but more like five or six, and Jesse just really struggled. And Triggs, it seemed all along, was the favorite to be in the rotation. The A's have been really high on him since last year. So I think it was kind of presumed all along that he would be one of the guys that won a job. And so the last spot was really between Jesse and Alcantara. And Alcantara kind of had an edge already being out of options. You know, that always helps a guy at this time of year because the A's, of course, don't want to lose him. So I honestly, the way things go, the way, you know, rosters are, you know, always changing, I wouldn't be surprised if Jesse's, you know, up maybe even in April, maybe more likely May. Of course, a lot of it depends on when Sonny's back, but I do think that his opportunity will come soon. He said, you know, he doesn't feel like he's too far off from being that guy that they can count on in the big leagues every fifth day.
Yeah, I would think that the A's, probably more than any other team, I mean, every team uses many more starters than five. Some use into the double digits. If you're having a good season, you'll use seven to eight. But I would imagine that the A's rotation could look much, much different sooner than later, probably more than we would expect from other teams. It's like 1 month into the season or whatever it is.
Yeah, I think they used more than 10 last year, more than 10 starters. And you look at the way the rotation is right now, you know, although there's a ton of talent in there, all those guys, I mean, they're still young, very much inexperienced, unproven. They're three through five starters, Cotton, Triggs, and Alcantara. Between them combined have made 16 big league starts. And then there's Manaea, who's only had, you know, a year in the big leagues. And, I mean, Graveman's still young himself. So just kind of a lot of unknowns there. And so I really wouldn't be surprised if there's a lot of movement within the rotation, you know, even in the first few months.
So moving on to Alejandro Deaza, who he opted out of his contract. He wasn't going to make the team. He played really well. He's 32 years old, a veteran guy. There wasn't really room for him. So maybe sign him back. Is there a chance? I guess this is the time of the spring when guys like this kind of they opt out or they get their release and then they have showcased themselves all spring to other teams. Where do you think he's headed?
Yeah, I really wouldn't be surprised if another team picked him up and added him to their major league roster. He had a really good spring, showed you know, just how fundamentally sound he is. Really good defensively at all three outfield spots, particularly center field, where the A's were really lacking in depth. And that's why coming into camp and, you know, watching Deaza have this success that he had early on and really throughout consistently, you know, you started thinking like, okay, this could be a really good fifth outfield option for them. But the way things are shaking out, it looks like they might be leaning more toward carrying four outfielders instead of five and going with an eight-man bullpen to start the season. And that fourth outfielder was always going to be Mark Canha. And Canha's been getting time at all three spots in the outfield. His defense, I would say, is average, and he really hasn't spent that much time in center. So, you know, to watch Deaza perform the way he did, it was kind of worth asking, well, why'd they sign him in the first place if, you know, it was kind of going to play out like this? I mean, he really did everything he possibly could, you know, to make an impression and potentially make the roster. And from the sound of it, it was just kind of one of those insurance things, you know, where if Rajay Davis got hurt, you know, Diaza probably would have been the guy to have been chosen to replace him. So, I mean, it kind of makes sense, but you also hate to see them lose out on a guy like that who kind of did everything they hoped he would do. They do still have Jeff Decker, another non-roster guy, who could be that fifth outfielder. They haven't made a decision on that 25th roster spot, so it's basically between, you know, carrying Decker, having that extra bench guy, or going with a three-man bench, which, you know, presents problems. It's not ideal, but having eight guys in the bullpen to kind of shore up, you know, potential problems with the rotation, you know, if some of those young guys fail to eat up innings early on. So it'll be an interesting decision for them. And I'm sure even if they start the season with an eight-man bullpen, I don't foresee that lasting very long, you know, maybe a week or two as they figure things out with the rotation. But I just don't see, in Diaz's case, him coming back, just because I kind of see him looking for opportunity elsewhere and probably getting it.
Okay, moving on to a totally different topic. It looks like the A's may be the only team left in town. A lot of news surrounding what's happening on the football side. So what's the status on that? And I guess that means that Coliseum is only going to be occupied by the A's. And what's going to happen in the future?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, all of a sudden, the A's are basically going to be the only team left in Oakland, which is crazy. The Warriors, of course, going to San Francisco, and the Raiders now, I mean, being approved for a move to Las Vegas. Now, their lease at the Coliseum runs for two more seasons. Now, that could be broken to kind of expedite their exit out of there, but I would have to think that the Raiders will at least be playing at the Coliseum another season, just because, you know, it's already nearly April. They do have other options for the following season. They could play where the Niners play at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara. I guess they could also play down in San Diego. And there's apparently already a stadium in Vegas, not where they will be playing in the future, but somewhere where they could play temporarily. So not too sure. The A's, of course, kind of taking the judicial route and, you know, responding to this and, you know, saying we hate to see the Raiders leave Oakland, but, you know, we're also kind of focused on our own efforts right now, and we're going to keep focusing on our efforts. And, of course, the Coliseum is one of the four sites that they're considering for their own new ballpark. So, you know, if the Raiders were to break their lease and leave the Coliseum sooner than planned, maybe the Coliseum site does become more of a viable option for them. So it'll definitely be interesting to see how things shake out. But I think the most interesting part about it is that they now are the only team left there.
Yeah, it's amazing. I know we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but just how it's sort of cruelly ironic, I guess, in that Oakland is enjoying sort of a resurgence. It's booming. It's becoming a place that people are moving to, or has for a while. Just a growing, really fun, cool city. And the sports teams are leaving. I mean, it's like they're moving backwards in that way.
Yeah, and also kind of ironic that, I mean, it wasn't too long ago that the, you know, the A's were trying to get out of Oakland themselves.
Yeah.
You know, trying to land in San Jose. And now, of course, it's the opposite is happening. You know, they're embracing Oakland, which, I mean, you know, at a time when you're watching other teams leave, this is as great a time of any for the A's to embrace Oakland and really kind of take ownership of the city. And I know that they're doing everything they can to do that. And I know we talked about this last week about the trading in Giants caps for A's caps thing.
Right.
I guess they had a few people come do that, at least 30, I heard, yesterday.
Wow.
I don't know if that's a lot, but it's maybe even more than I thought for one event. I mean, that was just at one event. They're kind of doing it all week. So, yeah, a lot of things happening with the A's right now, and it really all comes back to this, basically their whole slogan, which is rooted in Oakland.
Yeah, well, I hope the best for them because I really like that city. So hopefully better times are on the horizon. So we'll end this. You recently talked to Bob Melvin about the upcoming season. You did a little Q&A with him, so we're going to run that. Here is that interview.
What do you think will be your guys' biggest challenge this year?
You know what? I don't think we look. It is what our biggest challenge may be. Obviously, our division is very good. You know, Houston's gotten better. Seattle's gotten better. Texas has been at the top of the division a couple years in a row. The Angels are always dangerous with you know, guys like Mike Trout and Albert Pujols, Cole Calhoun. So, you know, the biggest challenge may be the division, but for us, we need to really concentrate more on ourselves and what we need to do each and every day. Expect to go out and win each and every day, and I think things will take care of themselves.
What are realistic expectations?
Yeah, I'm not putting any numbers on anything. We just want to play the game in the fashion that we did a couple years ago. Play hard every game. Expect to win when we go out there. I do believe we have a chance to get better and better as the season goes along, and that was consistent with past years too. So, you know, some teams will have goals. You know, the Cubs obviously are going to say, you know, our goal is to win the World Series. Ours are more short term and look to get better and then readjust our goals as the season goes along.
Guys, for several weeks now, what have you learned about this group?
You know what? We're really impressed with not only the newer guys that have come in and the example they set and the leadership qualities they have. The vibe in the clubhouse seems to be really good. Everybody pulls for each other here. They're understanding that for us to be successful, it's going to take everybody. And I don't know that I've been from start to the point we're in right now a better spring training, and we've had a lot of good ones here.
What do you think will be the strength of the team?
Well, it's the totality of everybody contributing. You know, certainly we have a young rotation. We've had some injuries here early on that could affect us a little bit. But to have a veteran bullpen like we do, I think takes some of the pressure off the younger starters. And then our lineup is going to be deep throughout. You know, we might not dominate with two or three guys in the middle of the order, but if you have a guy like Marcus Semien and 27 home runs hitting, you know, maybe seventh in the lineup, it means you're deep and you have a chance to score in every inning.
What do you specifically like about the lineup, just top to bottom?
Yeah, you know what? We're at least to this point, we're a lot different than we were last year. We're taking more pitches with the additions of Matt Joyce and Trevor Plouffe and Rajah Davis. You know, we do have some guys it seems like that are going to have better on base percentages. That's something we need. Sometimes it's not necessarily the walks. It's also just making a pitcher work and making them throw more pitches. We've seen that this spring. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to translate once the season starts, but I think we're going in the right direction with that.
Do you see the lineup as being the biggest improvement from last year, or what would you say is the biggest?
Yeah, I think so, and I think, you know, we're going to have power throughout too. I mean, you know, with Ryan Healy coming off the great season that he had, looks like Yonder Alonso's got a little different approach power-wise. You know, we might not have 30, 35 guys except for maybe a Chris Davis, but we have quite a few guys have the potential to hit between 15 and 20 home runs.
The Rangers are putting their team together in preparation for opening day, and it's actually looking pretty good. So let's check in with T.R. Sullivan on what's going on there. I'm Allison Fritter. T.R., A.J. Griffin, it occurred to me a couple weeks ago when I saw him pitch in San Antonio that this guy is probably a lock for the rotation, and now that appears to be true. He's had a really good spring. What have you seen from him that could really fortify this rotation?
Allison, you know, he missed 2 years. Came back last year, pitched okay, had some injuries. I think the big thing this year is that he's healthy. His body's in better shape. He's got a better feel for all his pitches. Just overall, he looks like a major league pitcher, ready to go. He's had a great spring. And, you know, this is a guy who can, you know, give you six innings a night and, you know, keep your team close and give yourself a chance to win. They won a lot of games with A.J. Griffin pitching for them last year. And I think they expect the same thing this year.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at. I was, of course, suspicious of the pitching kind of coming into spring training. There just were so many question marks, injuries. I don't know. There's some elements that give me hope for this team. One, they really don't need a fifth starter until the middle of April, which gives them a little bit of it buys a little time for them. But I don't know. It seems like things are coming together, and this looks like a pretty strong team from a pitching standpoint. Am I being too optimistic on that?
Well, you know, when you lead your rotation with Cole Hamels and Yu Darvish, and then you got Martin Perez, the number three guy, that's a pretty good start right there. I mean, sure, there's some question marks about number four and number five, and because Andrew Cashner and Tyson Ross aren't going to be on the opening day roster. They're going to be middle April, early May. But the other thing that's been great is the bullpen. The bullpen has just been outstanding. You know, Sam Dyson at the head as the closer. You know, they got some power right-handed relief pitching there. They got Alex Claudio from the left side. And this kid, Mike Hochschild, that they took from the Astros as a Rule 5 guy, he's going to stick as a middle reliever. He's pitched extremely well. So, you know, their pitching is looking very good. They got their lineup is deep. But overall, I think, you know, Adrian Beltre has a little nagging calf injury here in camp. Carlos Gomez is missing time with a jammed shoulder. But for the most part, it's been a pretty smooth camp for them, and I think they're ready to go.
So they had a Rule 5 guy, Mike Hochschild, who really was pretty impressive. This is a time of year where teams have to decide whether to return their Rule 5 draft pick to the original team or keep them. They have to be on the roster the entire season. So he's really carved a place for himself on this team. Where do you expect him to slot into that bullpen?
Middle long relief guy, 2-3 inning guy. He can start, and he has started in the past. He's pitched much better out of the bullpen this spring. Just comes in, throws strikes with two or three pitches, and shows no fear. Knows how to get the job done. This could be another good Rule 5 draft pick for them. You know, the other one they got a few years ago, Delino DeShields, he's had a fantastic spring, probably the MVP of this camp. And you got to like what the Rangers are getting out of that Rule 5 draft. They can't sneer at it anymore.
That's true. I mean, there are some diamonds in the rough when it comes to Rule 5. So, okay, good stuff. And the last thing that we're going to do is turn to an interview that you did with Jeff Bannister, a little Q&A previewing the season. So let's take a listen to that.
Jeff, one of the things you've stressed early in camp was incomplete mission. What does that mean for you?
Well, our mission has always been play for a World Series and bring a World Series title to North Texas. That part of it's incomplete. There are different aspects of when we set out, we have goals within that. Ultimately, it's to get into the World Series and play for a World Series championship.
One of the things you've been stressing in this camp is premium defense. That's near and dear to your heart. What kind of message do you talk about with your players in that regard?
Well, it's cherishing the baseball. It's always knowing the situation at hand, where we are in the game, where you need to throw the baseball, catching it, being prepared, on time with your feet when you're on the dirt, focused when you're in the outfield on watching the swing, watching the ball off the barrel. It's handling the baseball, making the correct throw, and more than anything else, it is being set the gold standard for routine plays. There are teams that have great athletes that can make outstanding plays, but it's about being the best at the routine plays, because when you're best at the routine plays, you're not adding on pitches for your pitcher. There's a domino effect in errors that really doesn't get monitored or looked at or talked about or even measured in a game. Last year in the first 2 years with the number of errors, we've looked at just the sheer volume of pitches that our guys have to throw and the number of outs that we have to get. We're below average across the board. When you think about pitches per inning, where the average in Major League Baseball is about 16 and a half pitches per inning. We're on average about 16.8. Doesn't seem like a whole lot, but when you add that over 162 games and all the innings, that's a lot of pitches, a lot of extra outs, and it takes its toll. There's collateral damage. It takes its toll not only on runs scored, but on the pitching staff.
Okay, now coming into camp, there was two big competitions, left field and the back end of the rotation. And the thing that I think stands out to a lot of people is how well the competition has been and how multiple guys have stepped up in both roles. That's got to be a good feeling for you to be able to pick and choose who you want in those spots.
Absolutely. It's been one of the best competitions in my tenure here look, we've been looking for somebody to put a foot down and take hold of a job out in left field. And then also, as any other team, we're looking at the back end of the rotation, somebody to step up. And the reality is, All of our guys have performed very well, not only in-game, pre-game, daily work, but just the instinctual way that they've played the game. In that left field spot, we've got three, four guys that have really shown up and allowed their skill set to play. And for three of those guys, look, you can envision those all those guys being on the team and playing a key role, not just in left field, but in multiple spots.
Now, the starting rotation is still going to be headed by Cole Hamels and Yu Darvish, two potential number one guys. That's got to be a good feeling to have a rotation leading off of those guys.
Yes, it is. And to have those two guys spearheading the front of that rotation, it is a comfort feeling. However, we do know that it takes more than five throughout the course of a year. And so developing those guys that can come in at 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and even 8 deep that can give us quality starts along the way. But when you have those two guys at the front, it really allows you to have the feeling that, look, hey, at any point in time, we can stop a mini losing streak.
Finally, we talk a lot about team goals and putting the team first, but there's a big significant event coming up early in the season, and that's Adrian Beltre going for his 3,000th hit. And I know he doesn't want that to go before team, but that's just something that's worth celebrating simply because Adrian's worth celebrating.
Yes, it is. Will be an incredible feat for any player, but for a guy the caliber of Adrian Beltre to be able to show up every single night and watch that number slowly tick down or quickly tick down, however it goes, but know that that eventually he'll get to that point. The anticipation for not only for our fans, but everybody on this team that unis up every night, it'll be a grand feat that we'll all celebrate. I'm sure a bunch of guys will try to touch the top of his head, but it'll be fun and one that I can't wait to celebrate.
Can't wait to start the season. That's Rangers manager Jeff Bannister. Thank you, Jeff.
The Astros are probably, by the time you're listening to this, en route back to Houston, which everybody is very excited about. It's been a long spring training. Let's catch up with Brian McTaggart and find out everything going on with this team. I'm Allison Futter. It's finally here almost, but the Astros are going to play a couple exhibition games at Minute Maid Park with the world champion Chicago Cubs, and then they open at home on Monday. So let's break it down. The rotation, A.J. Hinch has announced the order of the starting five. So what is that order? And I guess what, Dallas Keuchel gets the opening day nod.
Yeah, Keuchel, the opening day nod for the third year in a row on Monday, so no surprise there. Lance McCullers Jr. getting the ball in the second game of the season. Really no surprise either. It was between him and Charlie Morton for number two. Morton, who looked really good this spring, and I'm excited to see what he can do. When the season starts, we'll pitch the third game, and then Joe Musgrove will pitch the fourth game, which is the fourth and final game of the Seattle series. And then Mike Fiers, who started the last game in Florida, will start the fifth game of the year, next Friday's opener against the Royals. So rotation is all mapped out. Colin McHugh is going to stay back and throw in a bullpen or a live bullpen simulated game situation on Saturday. And he'll make one or two rehab starts, and then you'll see him back in the rotation at some point, a week or two in the season. But for now, that's the starting five they're going to battle with.
So, yeah, on Colin McHugh, let's talk about him a little bit. That was a little worrisome. You just see a pitching line, and you don't know what went into it, how hard the balls were hit. But it seemed like he pitched in a minor league game, and he lasted like an inning and a third. It didn't seem to look so good on paper.
Yeah, he pitched in a big league game, the game Monday against the Cardinals. It was his first Grapefruit League game, and it was a little sloppy. The velo wasn't quite there, but following up with Colin, he says he feels good, the arm is fine. So it's just a matter of getting some arm strength going at this point. So one more start, and then he can make a couple of rehab starts if he feels he needs one more to get the pitch count up or get the velocity going again. So. But it seems like the issue, the tired arm issue, is behind him at this point. It's just a matter of building up the pitches now.
Okay. All right, so let's move to the lineup. A.J. pretty much revealed a lot of who's going to hit where. Alex Bregman hitting the number two hole. So that's top five looks pretty awesome. How does that shake out?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's going to be Springer, Bregman, Altuve, Correa, and Beltran on the top five. And, you know, the first four right-handed hitters, but he likes Bregman in the number two hole just because he handles righties well. He hit there last year and really took off, and Bregman said that he likes to have an at-bat in the first inning. It just helps him get into the game a little quicker, so he's excited about hitting there. I mean, hitting behind Springer in front of Altuve, I mean, how is there a better spot to hit? I don't think so. I mean, that, if you're hitting in front of Altuve, that's a pretty good spot. Yeah, the one through five is solid, but after that, I mean, Josh Reddick will hit six on a lot of nights, and then, you know, Gattis seventh, and you have the, you know, or you have Aoki and Gurriel's in there, and it all kind of depends. You know, there are days that Beltran plays left field and Gattis DH, and days that Aoki plays left field and Beltran DHs, which will be most of those days. So bottom of the lineup will move around a little bit, but, you know, no matter the configuration, just, you know, one through nine, it's everyone can do damage, and when you have Gurriel hitting eighth or ninth, and or Aoki hitting ninth, with his ability to put the bat on the ball, certainly have come a long way in the last couple of years with these lineups the Astros have had. But going back to what you said earlier, one through five, hard pressed to find a better one through five in the league than that. And you can even go six, seven, and it's probably the deepest lineup in baseball.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that we haven't really talked a lot about is the fact that when the Astros had that terrible start last year, that really put them behind the eight ball for the most of the rest of the season, even though they got their act together. The turning point seemed to be when Springer was moved to the leadoff spot, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
Fact that he's going to start off there is pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, they didn't have Bregman from the start of last year, didn't have Gurriel from the start of last year. So, yeah, Springer at leadoff now. And, yeah, he moved to leadoff on May 24th. And then, you know, for the next 3 months, they had the best record in baseball in that span with Altuve hitting third. You know, Reddick's going to hit some second as well, you know, especially against right-handers. I think we'll see Reddick get up there and hit second. He might even lead off on the rare times that George Springer sits out. You know, he did play in all 162 last year, so, but he might lead off. But, yeah, just a versatile lineup, a deep lineup. And even the guys on the bench, Gattis, Marwin, Marisnik, they could, you know, they have versatility as well. Marisnik's, you know, a great defender. Marwin can play all over the place. So position player-wise, they're in really, really good shape if everyone can stay healthy.
So what's left? One roster spot remaining. What should we be looking for in the coming days before opening day?
Yeah, one roster spot remaining, which is the eighth and final bullpen spot. And it's coming down to James Hoyt and Yandel Gustave. And both of them have pitched pretty well this spring, and they're going to get one more audition in Thursday's game against the Cubs at Minute Maid Park. They will both pitch, and AJ said today, it's not like, you know, they're head-to-head and whoever gives up a homer is out, whoever pitches a 1-2-3 inning is in. He said they're going to meet before Thursday's game and talk about, you know, where they're at. I mean, I think more than anything, they probably are leaning one way or the other, but they just want the guys to get through the spring healthy. So they don't want to say, well, you know, we pick player A and then player B gets injured and you have to bring somebody over, you know, that kind of thing. So, but they both get one more shot. You know, I think if I had to handicap it, I think maybe Hoyt might have the advantage just because he can get lefties out with the split finger. He's got swing and miss stuff. I mean, they really value swings and misses, of course. But, you know, Gustave came in the other day and threw 96, 97, 98 and blew away a hitter and got a strikeout. So either one of them is deserving, and I think either one would be a good fit. But if I had to handicap it right now, I think Hoyt will get that final spot, but we'll see.
Okay. All right. Last thing on the batting order here is that you caught up with A.J. Hinch, did a little manager Q&A, so let's listen to that interview now.
Okay, spring's coming close to an end. Just how would you assess the way this team has come together? Just, you got guys in all different directions and from all different backgrounds.
Yeah, we haven't been together as a group as much as normal years with the WBC, and we've come into this camp having very few spots on our team that are open, but we have a good group. We have an understanding of each other. We've gotten to know some of the new personalities, and I like our team.
A lot of questions about pitching health, obviously, coming into camp. Are you satisfied with the way it's played out, specifically, I guess, with Keuchel and McCullers at the top?
Now, coming into camp, it was a big deal as to how healthy we were. Keuchel and McCullers being at the front of that. Even Morton, who coming off of a short season last year. The only guy that's really behind is McHugh. So when we come into the season with seven or eight names thinking about the the rotation. We come out of it right now at this point feeling really good about ourselves, having one guy down and behind. But you know, as a group, we have the capable bodies to put in a formidable rotation and start the season feeling really good.
Another kind of big storyline has been Gurriel at first. I know he's been an infielder, but still transitioned to a new position. How do you think he's looked over there?
You know, I think it's he's gotten better as the camp has gone on. You know, we kind of threw him there last year in an emergency in September, and he's having to learn the responsibilities and where the positioning is, and even something as simple as tags at first base, the bigger glove, the handling the ball. Has all made steps, made progress and steps forward. So I'm proud of the work that he's put in. We had Jeff Bagwell in camp with him, which was a big deal and something that he could gravitate to. But he looks completely comfortable. He might not have the experience that you'd expect coming from at first base, but as an infielder, he's got a ton of experience and handles the ball fine.
You haven't had a chance to have your full lineup just because of the World Baseball Classic, but are you anxious to see how it comes together and just you know, how dangerous it can be one through
nine? No, I do, because I think, you know, obviously I believe in the lineup working together. I want guys to know where they're going to hit for the most part, work in tandems with one another and get in a rhythm. We haven't been able to do that. We'll have a week before spring training ends to get those guys up and running. I like our guys. I think that we're going to have a deep lineup. We're having guys that have never hit in the bottom of the order that are probably going to be in the bottom of the order. And that's a good problem to have, but it's time to get them together.
Charlie Morton's been somewhat of a revelation just with his velocity and how well he's pitched. How surprising has it been just to see him do what he's been able to do?
Yeah, you know, it's been nice to have him come to camp ready to go. He was in the mid to upper 90s at the beginning of camp, which is not his norm. He's usually hovering in the low 90s with some sink. So he looks fresh. He looks under control. He looks very comfortable in our surroundings. He's blended into our pitching staff seamlessly. So I'm very happy that he's here. He looks like a guy who's going to contribute a lot and be difficult to hit.
You return all your big weapons in the bullpen, and do you think that your bullpen's a little underrated considering you know, went through three closers, but at the end of the day, you still have a lot of weapons.
Yeah, we have one of the most versatile and deep bullpens in the league, and obviously some big names can overshadow that on other teams, but as far as a productive multiple innings, getting left-handers and right-handers out, having different versatile roles, I have three different guys that I feel like I could close, maybe a fourth guy in Davinsky. You know, we have a lot of high strikeout guys in the bullpen. You know, when I go out to the mound and I take a starter out, not only do I have confidence in our pen, but that starting pitcher who's walking off the field feels like the guy coming behind him is going to do the job. That type of synergy and that type of belief is going to carry us a long way.
And finally, everyone knows April last year really put you guys behind the eight ball. You had to battle all year to overcome a 7-17 start. How important is it to set the tone in April, and what can you do as a manager just to try to get the guys to get up to a better start?
You know, we just need to win more games. You know, we played close games last April. We didn't come out on top on enough of them. 7-17 put us in a rough spell, and this is the same preparation and the same program that produced a much better spring in 2015. So we've got to compete from pitch one. We've got to play good at the at the moments that matter the most when the game's on the line, and find a way to find more wins. And it's no more complicated than that. We have the capable team to get off to a better start and set a better tone.
Anaheim Angels are getting ready to head back home after a very long spring training. I'm sure everybody's very excited about that, including Maria Guardado, who we're going to catch up with right now to catch up with all of the news going on with the Angels. I'm Allison Sutter. Maria, first of all, I guess there's been just a lot of flurry with rosters with every team, and Yasmero Petit has just been informed that he has made the team, according to the club. So what can you tell us about that, and where does he fit in?
Yeah, so Petit obviously came into camp on a minor league deal, so he was a non-roster invitee. But I think that the Angels were pretty impressed with his performance this spring. He initially started off as a starting candidate, but now he's kind of shifted more to kind of long relief, you know, multi-inning reliever, and that will be how he'll be used during the season. And, you know, I think that he's going to be a good addition to the team. You know, he's kind of a veteran right-handed arm. You know, he won a couple World Series with the Giants, so he also has that experience to build off of. And, I think the Angels were really impressed with what they saw. So he will definitely be on the opening day roster.
Yeah, they need to stockpile arms, obviously. I mean, you never can have too much pitching. But with the Angels, I mean, they're not naive about where they are and that they there are question marks abound everywhere. So they don't they have not named an opening day starter. This is the time, like during the last 2 weeks of spring training, where the reporters can kind of count out the days on the calendar according to what the rotation seems to be like at spring training, mm-hmm. and sort of figure out who's going to pitch opening day. Do you have like any kind of idea of what's going on with that?
Sure. So I think at this point there are kind of two candidates that might be starting on Monday when they face the A's in Oakland. As of right now, Matt Shoemaker is lined up to start, but I think that Ricky Nolasco could also be a guy who starts against the A's. He's actually making a minor league start today. And, you know, one of the reasons why he isn't starting in the Cactus League game is because the Angels are facing the A's. So, you know, why would you let your division rival get another look at him if you don't need to, right? So essentially it's going to be either Nolasco or Shoemaker, you know. So I think that announcement will probably come, hopefully by the end of this week, but, you know, we'll find out soon enough.
The announcement will definitely come by opening day, so I guess that's really all.
Yes, let's hope.
So they cut two relievers recently. I don't know if that was a surprise or not, but a couple of guys that seemed to sort of be in the mix, and they were cut. So what can you tell us about Guerra and Valdez?
Sure. So De Luis Guerra and Jose Valdez were both cut this week. They both had their stints in the Angels bullpen last year, but I think that the Angels really made an effort to kind of bolster their depth over the winter by bringing in a lot of guys who ended up being kind of in the mix for that bullpen, so they kind of ended up getting pushed out. You know, I think that the Angels have, you know, people who pitch better available now, you know, like guys like Bud Norris, Kirby Yates, Mike Morin, Blake Parker, and, you know, with that depth, they were kind of able to, you know, let those guys go on down to minor league camp. But, you know, they'll definitely be in play if someone gets injured, and they can provide depth down the line if that's needed.
And there's been a lot of talk about that the Angels are going to have a much improved defense. They've always scored pretty high with some mm-hmm. of the defensive metrics that maybe not a lot of people pay attention to, but certainly front offices do. Who makes them a better defensive team? You know, for all of the issues that they might have around their pitching, that seems to be an area that might be a strength.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. You know, last year, according to Fangraphs, this kind of comprehensive defensive team metric, the Angels actually finished fourth in the league behind only, I think, the Cubs, the Giants, and the Royals, I believe. And I think that a lot of that started with Andrelton Simmons, who, you know, is kind of widely regarded as the best defensive shortstop in the league. And then obviously they had Mike Trout in center field, Cole Calhoun in right. Those guys are all kind of premium defensive players. And it really looked like, you know, Billy Epler made an effort to build on that strength by bringing in Danny Espinosa to play second. He played shortstop for the Nationals last year, but also has a lot of experience at second, has a really great arm. So I think him and Simmons will be a great double play combination up the middle for the Angels. And then they also brought in Cameron Maven to play left. Maven actually doesn't have a lot of experience playing left field, but he manned center field for the Tigers last year, so it seems like that will be kind of a, you know, pretty smooth transition for him since he's very athletic. And they also brought in Martin Maldonado behind the plate, and Maldonado is kind of renowned for his cannon of an arm behind the plate. So, and he also is known as a great pitch framer. So I think that those are all skills that the Angels are going to value. So, you know, it's kind of interesting because I feel like one of the benefits of having a really strong defense is that, you know, you're obviously going to cut down on the errors, which is going to cut down on the amount of extra pitches that your pitchers are going to throw in a game. And that's going to be really important for the Angels considering that a lot of their pitchers are going to be facing workload restrictions, specifically Garrett Richards, who's coming back from kind of a damaged UCL, and Tyler Skaggs, who's going to be coming into his first full season off Tommy John. So, I think that it's really going to help the Angels' rotation as well and kind of keep them in games longer.
Okay. All right, we're going to end this with you recently caught up with Mike Scioscia for a quick Q&A previewing the season, so let's listen to that interview.
All right, so you guys were obviously hurt by a cascade of injuries to your rotation last year, but how much of a boost is it going to be to have Garrett Richards back healthy and kind of anchoring the rotation?
You know, getting Garrett back is important to our rotation. I think in the bigger picture, you can look at it as just one guy, but it's more than that. He's got the potential to be a lead dog. Hopefully he's going to be in the form that we saw a couple of years ago, where he was in the running for a Cy Young award, and but before his injury. So we're excited to have him back. It's important to us, and he's throwing the ball very well this spring.
Philly obviously made a lot of moves over the offseason to kind of bolster your pitching depth, you know, bringing in guys like Petit, Norris, Yates, Parker. How satisfied are you with your pitching depth now, especially on the relief end?
Well, it'll show up, and there's great competitive spring right now where guys are fighting for not only spots in the roster but roles. And that will continue, we hope, through the season because that makes you stronger. I think we're much deeper on our pitching depth than we were last year. And it's a good spot for our team to be in.
And you guys obviously fielded a very strong defensive team last year, but how much will the addition of guys like Maven, Espinoza, Maldonado help you build on that strength?
Yeah, it's going to enhance it. And I think our ability to turn ground balls and make more routine outs or more plays routine with the range we have is going to show up. And I expect that to be a big part of our whole the way we support our pitching is to make those plays.
Can you kind of put into words what Mike Trout means to this team?
Yeah, Mike helps in so many different ways. I think, first of all, he's a leader in the clubhouse. He's a leader on the field. He never takes a pitch off. He can change a game at any point. Not many guys in baseball can do that. He can change it with his glove. He can change it with charging a ball and stopping first and third on the defensive side. And obviously, on the base paths, you see the way he applies his speed. And the obvious thing is in the batter's box. He's a game changer there.
What are your expectations for Albert this year?
I think the first and foremost, we want to get Albert ready for the season. He's catching up as spring goes on, as bats are getting better and better. Our expectations that if he's primarily as a DH, that he's going to put up the numbers similar to what he has last year and last couple of years. This guy knows how to drive and runs, and we're going to set the table for him. And hopefully he'll be a big part of our lineup hitting right in the middle of it.
And last one, what do you think this team can contend in 2017?
I think there are some areas that are very, very important to us that we've improved on. One is absolutely starting pitching. I think we're going to be deeper. I think that our bullpen is going to have the potential to evolve as the season starts and continues into a deep bullpen. I think our everyday lineup and our bench is much deeper than it has been at any point probably in the last 3 or 4 years. So we're excited about that, and we intend to go one day at a time and not miss any steps, and hopefully at the end we'll be a contending team and reach our goal.
The Mariners are heading back to their home finally after an extremely long spring training. Everybody's very excited about that. Opening day is around the corner, so let's catch up with Greg Johns about everything going on in Seattle. I am Allison Footer. Greg, first of all, some not so great news about Shea Simmons being shut down. So what happened? How did this come about? And what's the prognosis?
Yeah, we talked about that. And don't send us home too soon. We got to open on the road in your home city of Houston.
Oh, that's so right. You're coming here.
Don't we don't get to see Seattle for another week after they shut down. But, yeah, no, we'll get to that. But Shea Simmons, hard-throwing right-handed. They really, really liked, picked up from in the Braves, and looked really good early in camp and started having some forearm issues. And they hoped it would just be a small thing where they could shut him down a little bit and get that thing healed up, but didn't come around as hoped, and a little setback there, and had to have another MRI yesterday, and they just see continued forearm strain, that flexor bundle there. So he's going to be shut down. It looks like it's definitely going to be a setback for him as far as getting back with the club, but he's hoping maybe in late April if he can get back on his throwing program. But it's worrisome because he had Tommy John surgery in 2014 and missed all of 15 and part of last year with that. So kind of he's had arms. As he said, hey, the only problem is what I do is pitch, and when my arm hurts, I can't pitch. So everything else is good. So when you're a pitcher, that arm is everything, and he's just having a little trouble with that right now. So not great news there. They do have better news with Steve Cishek and Tony Zick on the comeback trail there. So they got some guys coming back in that bullpen. Should be a little different mix. If they can get through the first few weeks, they could add some pretty good arms in mid-April.
Yeah, so things are kind of coming together. Like you said, there's a little bit of spring training left, but for the most part, opening day and opening week rotation has been set. So can you kind of run through that and just give us the order?
Yeah, Felix Hernandez making his ninth consecutive opening day start against the Astros. longest active streak in the majors. You can pencil in Felix number one for nearly a decade now with the Mariners, which is pretty impressive. And then Hisashi Iwakuma will pitch second. James Paxton will be the number three starter starting out. Drew Smyly will go fourth. And then Yabani Gallardo will open the first game of the Texas series on the fifth game. So that's the way they're rolling it out. They eventually probably split up the two lefties, Smyly and Paxton. But for to come out of the season, they pitch those guys three and four. So that was kind of the only question coming in. But service acknowledged today that they'd go with Paxton three and Smyly four, at least to start out.
Yeah, and I was running through the headlines on the Mariners website, and not that I was laughing because these guys are sick, but it sounds like Cruz and Cano, said something like they're getting over their colds, but it sounded like it was pretty major. There's different levels of having a cold, and those head colds can really get you. And it sounds like it was a World Baseball Classic residual effect that they kind of got sick right after their run through the World Baseball Classic. Is that what happened?
Yeah, no question. I mean, and it does sound, guys, I think they hate to say, oh, he's out with a cold, but this is one of those pretty nasty viruses that started out in the head and went down into the chest, and these guys can barely talk, and they looked like garbage, to be honest. I mean, they came in, and Scott Service looked at him and said, you guys got to go home. I just kept him out of the clubhouse for a couple of days and tried to get him, and they literally couldn't walk. Even now, still dragging a little bit as they kind of get back from that thing. James Paxton had the same thing, pushed him back to the start for a couple of days, and kind of went around the clubhouse. But yeah, I think a lot of it was the WBC. Those guys were traveling, doing some things, and kind of got out of whack a little bit. And I don't know what happened, but those are guys that don't ever miss games. And here in spring, of course, it's not quite as important. And I think maybe regular season, who knows what would have happened. But they definitely here in spring. No need to be a hero, as Service likes to say. Let's get you healthy and ready for the start of the regular season when it counts. So, yeah, they're finally back today. Haven't played for the last 5 days, so eager to see them get back, get a few at-bats today, and probably pick it up a little here down the stretch and be ready for Monday when we hit the field in Houston.
Yeah, it's this time of year, there's just a lot of teams that either will, host a couple of exhibition games at their ballpark, or they'll go somewhere, they'll leave spring training, they'll go somewhere to play an exhibition series at somebody else's home ballpark, regular season home ballpark. And I guess the Mariners, that would be ridiculous for them to ever host that. They've never done that before, right? Because that's a detour that no major league team could possibly take, to go up to Seattle just for a couple game stop before they go on. Have the Mariners ever done that?
I think in Seattle, they did once or twice. I remember they played in Vancouver one year back when Edgar was playing, and it was a park that wasn't a normal major league park, and the turf was soft, and he ended up straining his hamstring and missed part of the season. And I think that ended that idea of ever playing in Vancouver again when you lose Edgar. So they've played. They've had some two game sets in Vegas and different places. But for the last I don't know, 3, 4, or 5 years, they've just stayed in Arizona, played the last two games here with the Rockies, who also stay. And frankly, for me, it's I don't mind just kind of staying here in Arizona in the nice weather and kind of wrapping things up and then hitting on the road. It would be nice for the Mariners to open at home once in a while, and then maybe they could do something different. But they've been, I think, on the road. It's 8 of the last 9 years they've opened on the road. So,
really?
Yeah, why not? Yeah. Which is funny to me, because Seattle, with a roof that closes, you don't have to worry about the weather so much. So you'd think by looking at it, that would be a pretty good place to open in early April. But the schedule makers apparently see differently, and we don't have any control over that. So we will sit down here in the sun a couple of days and go to Houston and your fine city and play some games in Minute Maid Park.
That's really interesting that they've had so many starts on the road in the last decade. I mean, the Astros in the last 25 years have started on the road 5 times. Because there's no reason not to start at home. But, yeah, I would think all the roof ballparks, they'd have precedence over some of these other places. That's very odd.
We'll bring that up in Major League Baseball.
I seriously am flummoxed by that. I do not understand that at all, how that could possibly be that they start so many times on the road. Okay, yeah, I'm going to complain to whoever I need to complain to get that changed.
Well, make you the spokesman for us.
Exactly. All right, Greg. So we're going to end this. You recently caught up with Scott Servais for a little manager Q&A previewing the season. So let's take a listen to that right now.
When you have a Felix Hernandez on your team, what does that mean to have that guy to roll out there on the first day?
Oh, it's really nice. There's no doubt. The one thing with Felix is, you know, you trust him. And, you know, even if the day he doesn't have his great stuff, he will find a way to compete, stay in the game, and give you a chance to win. And, you know, I value as much as anything is the innings that he brings us, knowing that he's going to take the ball and go out there and compete at a high level. So it's nice to be able to have him once every 5 days.
The lineup this year, a little different at the top. You got some speed you didn't have. What are we going to see from this club when you run him out there?
I think we're going to have a real explosive offensive team. I do. You know, we hit a lot of home runs last year. Probably surprised a lot of people, including myself. I didn't see us having that much power, but that's kind of the way it played out. The ball carried a little bit better in Safeco Field than it has in the past. But I think the different ways of scoring runs. We've got some more speed on this team than maybe we had last year. We're much more athletic in the outfield. So run prevention is also a big part of this thing. So I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out. You know, with Dyson and Segura at the top, it should put some pressure on some other teams.
You mentioned home runs. I mean, this is a team that hit a lot of them last year. Why the speed? I mean, a lot of teams are going more for power. You guys felt needed speed. What's the?
Well, you know, speed, I'm talking about athleticism, guys that can make plays in the outfield. And along with that, you know, they put a little bit more pressure. They can go first to third. They score from first on doubles in the gap. They, you know, they can do some different things, different dynamic, and steal bases, you know, get into scoring position, you know, easier without having to hit a double or a triple. So I just like the balance on our club as much as anything. And I think that's key. No matter what you're doing, how you're building it. And, you know, Jerry and I made a priority. We wanted to see if we could do it. Never know if it's going to work out that way, but I'm excited to see how our lineup plays out.
Right, a lot of new faces. Gene Segura, a kid that's come in here and really could be a difference maker for you. Tell us about what you're going to see from him in short.
I think he's kind of ready to take the next step in his career. I know he goes back to shortstop this year after playing second base all last year, but he's very comfortable at short. Certainly got plenty of arm. Really comfortable with Robbie Cano at second base. Those guys are inseparable. They're together all the time. And I think they'll really feed off each other. You know, Gene had a great offensive year last year. We'll take anything close to that this year again with the other guys behind him in the lineup. Him being on base, stealing bases. I think it adds a nice, nice dynamic piece to the top of our lineup. I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out.
Another new face for Mariner fans, Mitch Haniger. You guys have been high on him since he came in here. How good has he been this spring, and kind of what can we expect from him? It's kind of hard to remember. He's a rookie.
He is. You know, he's a little bit older, and the fact that, you know, old, the 26-year-old season coming up with him. But everybody has a different path, and I think if you look at Nelson Cruz, had a different path. They didn't really figure it out until he was a little bit in his later 20s in the big leagues. But we're going to give Mitch every opportunity here to play every day and see how that does play out over the course of a season. I really like what he brings defensively in the outfield. He can play all three outfield spots at a very high level. He throws well. You know, he just goes about everything in a real professional manner, beyond his years. You know, kind of how he prepares. You would think this guy's had 6-7 years in the big leagues. And, you know, he attention to detail, really good teammate. We like what we've seen so far. He's playing well, which makes it even easier to like him. But looking forward to him having a big year for us.
If there's a key, and I know there's a million of them, but a key for this year to really be a success, take it to the next level.
Oh, I think, you know, consistency throughout the season. We did have some tough losing streaks last year. Credit to our team is we did bounce back. I thought we finished the season very strong because we really developed kind of a family atmosphere around our team where guys really believed in each other. I think that carries over from last year's team into this year, hopefully getting us off to a quick start. And, you know, I think any team, it's staying healthy. I think the bullpen is huge in winning the games you're supposed to win. You know, I think it's going to be really big for us. And we play a lot of tight games. We did last year. I think we played 61-run games. And we were 30-30, but we need to do better in those games. And those are, you know, it's execution, a play here or there that can change the way a ball game goes. So there's a number of different things, you know, that'll be key for us. But I'd like to see us get off to a good start. And that'll really help.
Talking about good starts, opening day, you've been through a lot of different aspects of this game, different positions. What does opening day mean to you when you step out there on that line?
Oh, I think everybody that's got a uniform on, and even the guys upstairs in our front office that have put the team together each year, you have a few butterflies. You're anxious. You know, you're nervous. You want to get the players want to get the first hit. They want to get the first guy out if they get on the mound. They, you know, and from my side, we want to get the first win. You want to get off on a good start and get it going there. But, you know, that anxiousness, that butterfly, that's a good thing. You know, that means that the game still means something to you and you love the competitive atmosphere around the game. And our guys are looking forward to it. I certainly am. My second year, and can't wait to get going.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.